68%, 78 Kenosha, 77 in Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. It's 10 past 8. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. The Carthage Choir has just returned from what sounds like an absolutely splendid tour of Great Britain. And I'm really excited to be able to spend today's program with their illustrious director, Dr. Maggie Burke, and with four of the students who were members of the choir and who participated in this wonderful trip to Britain. So we have with us Ella Bergfeld, who is going to be a senior music theater major, political science major at Carthage, and also happens to be the president-elect of the choir. Hayden Izumi, who will be a junior music ed major. Ben Breitbach, who is a senior criminal justice major. And Leila Nemri, who is a junior music education major. And we welcome all five of you to the morning show.
Morning.
Good to have you here. I'm excited to talk with you. I'm trying to tamp down my sense of envy because Britain is a place I have never been and hope to see someday. And I hope that even more after having seen pictures and heard some stories and heard a bit about just what a wonderful trip this was. But Dr. Burke, before we get specifically to this trip to England, explain to our listeners why musical ensembles like the Carthage Choir undertake these kind of tours. What purpose do they serve?
As ensembles, as part of a liberal arts school, touring offers us so many opportunities to kind of broaden our horizons in so many ways. Experiencing new cultures, experiencing, you know, the feeling of being in a new place and having to orient yourself in that space. Obviously, exploring the musical heritage and traditions of many different places, obviously, too, is a huge part of why we do it. And a place like Great Britain obviously has an incredibly rich musical history and culture, particularly in choral music, started with these cathedrals and with these collegiate churches, that has really kind of become one of the most prominent choral sounds of the world today. Hmm. And so being able to be there, being able to experience, you know, church services with even like an evensong service, being able to work with established conductors and musicians, and being able to kind of see how we grow as people and as musicians is really, really kind of why it's so crucial to our kind of department philosophy at Carthage.
Well said. I know that this trip made a lot of sense in terms of your first international tour with the choir, not only for everything that you just said, but obviously because it is a place with which you are well acquainted, although I don't know for a fact that you've been there before, but it feels like you've been there before, and certainly you had some connections on which you could sort of capitalize to make this an even more special trip.
Yeah, absolutely. So my own personal musical kind of journey began with British church music in many ways. I grew up as a chorister in a cathedral here in the States, of course, but that sound, the sounds of those, you know, men and boys choirs, the sounds of those men and girl choirs, and then of course the, you know, professional choirs like Voce State, Steely Antico, so many of those groups were the CDs that played in my car growing up, on our drives around Northeast Kansas of all places. But that was kind of the music that taught me how to love music, and so it was really special to kind of get to experience that with my students on this trip as well.
Wonderful. So I'm wondering, among our students, if any of you had ever been to Britain before, or for that matter, out of the country, out of the hemisphere, in the way that this trip turned out to be. Let's start with Ella Bergfeld.
Yeah, so I actually went out of the country my very first time this last year in January. I actually went on another J-Term tour with another music faculty member, Dr. Danae. I went to Namibia, Botswana, and Zimbabwe. We didn't do anything music related there, but that was my first time out of the country and flying over the ocean.
Mm. Very good. How about you, Hayden Izumi?
This tour is actually the first time I ever left the country. It was an incredible experience, and just flying with the fellow students and flying with Dr. Burke and Professor Hoagland, it was a great experience, and I will always cherish it in my heart.
Nicely said. How about you, Leila Nemri?
Yeah, this was my first time on a plane, and this is my first time out of the country. Wow. So it was really, truly something to cherish, and I'm just so, so grateful to Carthage and to Dr. Burke and to everyone who made this experience possible and so, so, so memorable.
Wonderful. Finally, our one non-music major in the group, Ben Breitbach, tell us whether or not this was a real first for you.
So this was actually my third time out of the country. First time, I was six. We did a family vacation to Mexico. That was really cool. And then the next time was actually at the end of May, so like 3 weeks before we left for the UK, I went on a cruise to the Bahamas, which was a nice kickoff to summer. And then following that up with tour in the UK was just incredible, because like I'd been being out of the country, like Mexico, the Bahamas, it's not as different as America, at least the places that I stayed at, but the UK was just a crazy shift from what I was used to, and it was really cool to experience that. So it felt like my first time out of the country.
Fantastic. Dr. Burke, say a quick word about the process of putting a tour together, which is challenging enough even if you're just going to Washington, D.C. or someplace relatively close. What was involved logistically in putting this trip together, and what were you especially anxious for the students in the choir to experience?
I would say, you know, obviously there's so much that goes into one of these things. You know, kind of the first thing I always start with is, you know, performance venues and spaces, and trying to figure out, you know, where we're going to be, what kind of experiences that we want to have musically, as, you know, it's like our primary purpose is to go there and to sing and make music. And, you know, and when you're going to a place like the UK, where the world, while technically the stuff of the earth is not any older, it feels like it is. So, you know, being able to experience singing in these spaces that were built for this in so many ways was a really high priority thing on my list. As well as, you know, what kinds of attractions do we want to see as a group? Where are places we can have, you know, individual free time? You know, and then, of course, the more kind of like soft aspects of the trip, but that are also really important in the sense of where are we staying, how densely scheduled are some days versus others, you know, do we have, you know, a group meal, or are we going to be, you know, separate? There's just so many like little things, and I'm really lucky. I worked with an amazing tour company called Classical Movements out of Virginia, who really put together an amazing itinerary for us, obviously with, you know, my guidance in the sense of here's what we want. But it's really, really helpful, and I'm really, really grateful because, you know, it costs money to do that, and the fact that we have the administration support of our department chair, Matthew Hoagland, and also just President Swallow and the entire Carthage administration behind us as well really, really helps.
So exactly how long was the tour, and during those however many days you were gone, how many actual concerts were there, and was there any other singing that the students did apart from full-fledged, full-length concerts?
Yeah, so we were in London for 3 days. We then had a day in Stonehenge and Bath. Then we went up to Stratford-upon-Avon and Rugby, a little in toward the Midlands, and then we had 3 days in Edinburgh. We basically kind of had a singing thing every other day. So our first concert was in Kensington in London, at Christ Church Kensington. The next day, we actually had a workshop with the composer and performer Bob Chilcott, who is a member of the King Singers, published composer, you know, hundreds of times over, and really one of the kind of guiding musical lights in Britain's choral scene. And we actually sang one of his pieces at Christmas Festival 2 years ago, and so we brought that piece back, and when as well as our other British rep on our tour program, and sang that for him. The next thing we did was we sang an Evensong at the Rugby School, which is one of the most posh private schools in all of Britain, I would say. I have a connection there, a friend of mine, Richard Tanner, who I've known since I was in high school, is the director of music there. He's actually leaving. He's in the process of moving right now to take over as director of music at St. Thomas Fifth Avenue in New York City, which is, you know, one of the preeminent men and boy choir programs in the States. But he was his last Evensong before he left there. So wow. It was really special that we got to sing with his choir, which, you know, at Rugby, you know, it's kind of the equivalent of like an East Coast prep school, I would say, is sort of the vibe, except if it was in Hogwarts, like, you know, kind of it's pretty wild. But a lot of his singers were all choristers at St. Paul's in London, at Westminster Abbey, at, you know, King's College, Cambridge, all these places where they grew up at these, you know, again, thousands of hours of singing, you know. So I told my students, I was like, you guys, they're going to be really good. Just hang on to your hats. And it was so funny. I think it was one of my tenors after the fact came up to me, and he's like, "This kid is 15, and he's better than I'm literally ever going to be." And I'm like, "No, that's nothing out on you, man. These people have just a crazy, wild experience, you know, kind of growing up." And that was great, and that was an amazing experience. Also, you know, to get to hear a real British organ in a space that was designed for it. I'm sure that my students will talk about that later. But it hits as they would say, it hits different. Then we drove up north to Edinburgh, which is about a 6-hour bus ride. And we had a day to be tourists. We had a concert at the Greyfriars Kirk in Edinburgh, which is right in the Royal Mile area. That actually has a very famous graveyard. It's one of supposedly like the most haunted place in Edinburgh. And there's a cute little story about a dog and who has a statue there called the Greyfriars Bobby. Bobby was a dog whose owner died, and he refused to leave his owner's side even in death. Wow. But then, of course, that became a marketing ploy. So there were several Bobbies that became a whole thing. So, but it was an amazing space, absolutely stunning. And especially for our last concert for seniors, I literally don't know like what a better place to sing. No, it was really, really fantastic.
Fantastic,
wonderful. A last question for you, Dr. Burke, before we turn things over to the students a little more fully. Putting together the repertoire for what the choir was going to sing on this tour, what kinds of things did you think about? And in particular, the whole matter of, for instance, singing British music for British audiences versus singing, for instance, American things? I mean, there are all kinds of different choices, different philosophies you could have followed. What did you ultimately think about in putting the program together?
The program that I ended up picking that we sang is actually based on the idea of what it means to feel at home, to build a home. So it's literally called To Build a Home is what the program is. Obviously, thinking about the sense of To Build a Home, you know, on a lot of the levels between, you know, us as a choir, our own places of birth, our own origin, our country as a whole, kind of thinking about what that looks like. And, you know, both in a sense of, you know, an honoring traditions and also in a sense of, you know, advocating for change in the sense of, you know, how it, our own individual actions, our own individual stories are what make home in that sense. Music in terms of, you know, where it comes from and where, you know, it was a real mixed bag. As I'm very lucky in that I've had a lot of experiences touring to different countries. And in particular, when I was an undergrad, I spent a month in Norway with the St. Olaf Choir, which is, you know, very Norwegian. And we, on that program, Dr. Anton Armstrong, who is still the director of the choir, had us sing a few very carefully selected pieces of Norwegian music that we, you know, we workshopped that dialect to death. Like, we made sure it was exactly perfect. And honestly, like, all those Norwegian audiences were, like, thrilled to hear, you know, a choir coming in, an American choir coming in, and, like, whoa, your Norwegian is incredible. Like, you know, we had this one song called Paul and His Chickens, which we did in a dialect, and it took us, again, forever to figure it out. But they were all so impressed. And so I had that experience in my mind in a sense of, you know, if we're going to do something that's there from their tradition, obviously I want my students to learn it. I want them to have this, you know, we sang a piece by William Byrd, who is a Renaissance composer. We sang a piece by Charles Perry, who is a late Romantic, early 20th century composer. Again, all the kind of the stalwarts of the British repertoire in many ways. But, you know, I wanted us to do it really, really well. And that was really, one of the really cool things about working with Bob Chilcutt, was kind of hearing his take on it, and him being really, he was really, really, really impressed, which was really awesome.
Wow.
In terms of, you know, other composers, though, because the theme is so wide and open, it's really easy to incorporate a whole lot of different stories and perspectives. We had a piece by a Venezuelan composer setting a text from Africa. We had a piece from a composer in Chicago who was setting a text from South Africa. Mm. We had you know, stuff from the Philippines. A friend of mine, Dr. Arianabella, her piece called Bayanihan. We have, again, there's just so many ways that you can approach a text like an idea like that and tell stories, which is kind of why I program narratively the way that I do. So.
Fantastic. For those of you just joining us, we are talking today on The Morning Show about the recently completed tour of the Carthage Choir to Great Britain. We are talking today with Dr. Maggie Burke, who is their director, and with four of the students who are members of the choir: Ella Bergfeld, Hayden Nizumi, Ben Breitbach, and Layla Nemri. Layla, I know that you cannot stay to the end of this interview, and I know that from what you said earlier, that this was your first time on a plane. So I want to be sure to give you a chance to talk about the long plane ride over, which I know was an overnight flight, and what I am assuming was an equally long flight back home. What was it like to have your first time on a plane be a plane flight like that?
Yeah, it wasn't super nerve-wracking. The most scary parts were takeoff and touchdown. But everyone I sat by members of the choir, very luckily, they were all very excited to hear it was my first time flying. They were all like, it's going to be great. It's going to be amazing. It was an experience. That overnight flight was not easy to sleep, so I didn't get a ton of sleep for that first day in London, but I managed. I mean, the adrenaline of being in a brand new country kind of helped take me along afterwards, but it was very cool, and I'm very excited for the next time I may be on a plane, and I'm glad I had such a great experience with so many people to make sure it was great for my first time.
Nicely said. If I understand correctly, the first thing that all of you did after touchdown was an English tea. I'm excited to hear what that English tea was like, and any happy memories that any of you have to share about that.
Sure. So we touched down. We made our journey through London to our hotel. We all had like 10 minutes to go upstairs, get ourselves ready and like dressed nice and formal for this English tea. The dress code at this place was pretty, I would say, pretty strict, especially compared to like American standards. Here we tend to just be more casual all around. So yeah, we had 10 minutes to go and change and get ready. Then we journeyed over to, we were in the Kensington Gardens, which is this lovely green space in the middle of London. And we all got to sit at our little tables. We did the little tiers. Dr. Burke had explained step by step before we got there how we were supposed to take this English tea and to do it correctly. So we had a lot of guidance from Dr. Burke and from our on the ground guide. So it was really fun. We were all very tired, but the tea was delicious. Best thing I've ever eaten.
Anybody have anything to add about English tea?
It's, you know, as like a person who has seen it those before, it's one of those experiences where I'm like, I know this is going to be a little bit off the beaten path for some folks, but it's such a gentle experience, you know, like you're served this, like, you know, a delicious pot of tea, and there's sugar and there's some milk and there's the whole stack of finger sandwiches. And then there's, of course, the revelation of the trip for many people, which was a scone with clotted cream and strawberry jam, which is, you know, truly sensational. And then, of course, the bonbons. And there's just, it's relaxing in a sort of very British way about it.
Yeah. Anyway, it's fun. Well, I saw photographs and they looked absolutely delightful. So that seemed like a wonderful way to go. I've perused the itinerary, but I'm foggy on what happened when. But I do know that one of the things that happened was that the choir got to visit and experience Stonehenge. So I'm really excited to hear from the students about what that was like. I just saw a smile cross Ben's face. So Ben, I'm going to call on you first. What would you like to tell our listeners about the experience of seeing Stonehenge with your own eyes?
Yeah, so it was really cool, for lack of a better word. So to get there, you could either take, like, the shuttle bus they had running, or you could walk. I think all of us walked there, and most of us took the shuttle back. But the walk there was an adventure. So it was cool. We got to see all these, like, sheep and this pasture land, and it was really beautiful. But then there was all this sheep poop that was on the path that we had to, like, jump and avoid. And it was lots of fun, though. And then once we got there, it was cool. Like, it's a bunch of rocks. It shouldn't be that cool. But, like, it was really cool. Like, I had seen pictures and read it about and heard about, like, friends that I had who had been to Stonehenge before. And so I had really I was high expectations, I guess, and they were met above and beyond. It was just absolutely incredible. The day was beautiful. It was, like, 74 and sunny. It was awesome. And, yeah, it's just really cool rocks. I don't know. It was really cool.
I've heard people say that seeing Stonehenge in person is a little bit like seeing the Taj Mahal in person. That, I mean, it's one of those things you've probably seen pictures of dozens of times, maybe hundreds of times, and yet there is something about seeing it with your own eyes and realizing that this is a real place, it really exists. It's not just some artist's rendering, but there is really this place called Stonehenge, and especially with all of the mystery that surrounds it. Anybody else want to join in with any thoughts about visiting Stonehenge? All right, let's proceed to the other sort of touristy things that you experienced. Hayden, we haven't heard from you in a little bit. Hayden, tell us one of your highlights in terms of the touristy things you saw and or visited.
Oh, one of my favorite things that we visited was the Tower of London. Besides music, history is one of my very favorite subjects, and I remember walking up and I was like, this is it. I'm like, we've made it. We've officially made it. And to be able to walk through it and to see the history, to read all about it and actually know that I was standing there and to know that all of these past events have happened, I was joyous. I mean, Layla was next to me probably the entire time. She saw I was being my own tour guide for people. I was just like walking around being like, yeah, this happened here and this and this and that and this person. I was just having the best time of my life. And I wish we had more time there. And I was very grateful that we were able to spend a couple hours at the tower.
Mm. Hayden, for those listening who are not history buffs or a little rusty on their British history, in a nutshell at least, summarize why the Tower of London is such an important place. I mean, give us a sense of just some of the really important things that have happened there.
Oh, God. Okay. This is where I'm going to fumble. So, lots of things have happened. I mean, many kings have been there. The royal jewels are sitting right there. I mean, every important part of history is of every type of crown, every type of jewel, every important figure in the inauguration for the royalty is all sitting there.
Wow.
If you walk through just the main area of the tower, you have all different types of armor, all different types of carvings, all different types of writings, all different types of papers. It's all a compilation of everything. And it's like everywhere you walked, it was just like, there's history. Like, this happened here, this happened here. And it's like, I don't know. You can do a whole crash course on it. But it's very fun, very fun.
Wow. Sounds exciting. Ella, what would be one of your touristy highlights of this trip?
I think along similar lines to Hayden, I really enjoyed our time at Edinburgh Castle. We didn't go as an entire choir, but if we had time, if you would like to go, you could get tickets and go to the Edinburgh Castle. If you are unfamiliar with the geography of Edinburgh, basically everything is on one flat plain except for the Edinburgh Castle. It sits above the entire town, so you get a bird's eye view of Newtown, Old Town, and then you can see the North Sea from the castle. So obviously that's a stunning view of the city, and you can really get like a 360 tour of Edinburgh from the castle. But they have within the castle's confines a really old church, basically, and it was erected in like 1100 something like that, so one of the oldest structures still standing in the United Kingdom. So it was cool to go in there and I don't know, put yourself in the shoes of somebody who would be walking around in 1100. So that was really cool. But I also really loved riding the tube in London. I felt very touristy doing that, but it was so fun.
So how is that put together, and what is it like to navigate that? I assume you've been, for instance, on the subway in New York City or Chicago or some places like that. Is it similar?
I've actually never been on public transportation before, so wow. It was a little different, I guess, going on public transportation for the first time in a different country. Our on-the-ground guides and Dr. Burke and Matthew Hoagland are very familiar with basically everything. So they were very helpful in shepherding all 40 of us in and out of the tube stops. It's way more straightforward than I think I had made it out to be in my head. So I eventually became one of the fearless leaders in our tube riding experiences. So it was definitely different as the choir. We normally travel in like a charter bus. It's just the easiest way to get 40 people around. But instead, we all got to go underground together. So it was super fun. We had a great time riding the tube.
Fantastic. Dr. Burke, Ella just made reference of the fact of this was something that not the whole group did, which of course implies that there were times in this tour where students were essentially free to do what they wanted to do. What was kind of the balance of that, and how much of the time was theirs to decide what exactly they were going to do versus experiences that were a little more programmed for the whole choir in mind?
My general kind of philosophy with that was London, we were pretty structured because it's such a huge place. And, you know, it is kind of the big, you know, kind of cosmopolitan city where there's a lot to see. And it could be, you know, how do you decide what to do with just a couple days in London, you know? So it was structured there. Then when we got to Edinburgh, you know, it was toward the end of the trip. And so, you know, I was thinking, you know, sometimes people kind of want to move at their own pace, you know, kind of move at their own time. And so that was a bit less structured there. So we all had more time to, if they really wanted to go to the castle, they could. Another amazing spot in Edinburgh is Arthur's Seat, which is actually this kind of like large hill. It's kind of in the middle of the town. Some folks hiked up that, some folks, you know, walked around the Royal Mile area. So again, just kind of having that balance of flexibility and not, like in London, for instance, you know, the day we went to the Tower of London, it was Tower of London. Then we had our workshop with Bob Chilcott. Then we had a group dinner, and then we split off into either a ghost tour or a pub tour. You know, we had lots of different kind of structured things there, but Edinburgh was more kind of explore on your own time.
Yeah, so Nice. Sounds like a nice balance. We're speaking today on the morning show about the recently completed tour of the Carthage Choir. We're talking with their director, Dr. Maggie Burke, and we have now three students who are part of the choir: Ella Bergfeld, Hayden Izumi, and Ben Breitbach. Layla Nemri was with us a little bit earlier. Dr. Burke just mentioned food. So Ben and Hayden and Ella, I am interested to hear what English food was like on this trip, and if you have any highlights or lowlights that you want to share with our listeners. Ben, can we circle back to you?
Yeah, pizza was good. So that group dinner that Dr. Berg mentioned, I think was the one where we had went to the pizza place. And it was cool because they had this like basement room kind of thing where we all like had our own like little tables and space and stuff to just eat and talk and kind of reminisce about the day and what had happened. And it was good. Like, I don't know, I kind of was unsure because I'm like, I don't know, pizza and the UK, I don't know. It was good though. It was good. At least I thought it was. When we did the tea, when we first got there, in like the tray with like the little like finger sandwiches, there was one that it was like a wrap thing. Dr. Burke was sitting across from me, and she's like, "You gotta try it. and so I did, and I was kind of scared, if I'm being honest. But when I tried, it was like, oh, okay, this actually wasn't like as bad as I thought it was gonna be. So I was sort of unsure about food, I guess, going in. I don't know why, I guess I'm kind of not picky, but the what's the word I'm looking for?
You enjoy
adventurous, right. Or
no, I'm adventurous. I think sometimes I like the same things. I guess. But so it was really cool to kind of go a little bit outside of my comfort zone. And then with some of the local places in like Better Night in Bath, like these like little local restaurants, it was cool to kind of try some things that I probably like wouldn't have tried otherwise. So I enjoyed the food aspect of it personally, because it let me kind of expand my horizons when it came to.
Nicely put. Ella, I'm told to ask you about the oysters.
I would love to tell you about the oysters. I am the complete opposite of Ben. I'll try anything once. I love food. I really like cooking. Usually I eat mostly like plant-based vegetarian, but I was talked into trying oysters for the first time. I had never had them before. The whole way you have to eat oysters is a little unsettling, in my opinion, like if you think about it too much. So you have your oyster, you put your accoutrements on it, and then you have to like fish it out of its shell and then slurp it. And to some, that seems that's the best way to describe it. To some, that seems like a little unnerving, and definitely watching people try them, like just so I could watch and then do it the next time, I was like, oh my, like this is a whole thing. This thing was alive and now I'm going to be eating it. So I tried it for the first time and they are delicious. I think that they are my new favorite food. I had them not once but twice on this trip, and then I also had mussels for the first time and those were delicious. So now I don't know what I'm gonna do without my oysters and mussels in the Midwest.
Well, you'll find them someplace, but probably not quite as good as you just had in Britain. Hayden, would you like to add anything to all of these culinary tales?
Yeah, I mean, I was just there to eat. I mean, I'm not there to eat, but I was there to try. I mean, if every time we had free time to go out and go eat food, I mean, I was just there to eat. I mean, I wanted to try anything that we could have. I mean, every time we had a group dinner, I was excited to experience new things. And I mean, I was excited. That's really it. I mean, I was hungry. I was there to sing. I was there to eat. I was there to have fun. And I achieved all three of those things.
Well, congratulations. Leila Nemri, there's a rumor that you might be back. Are you back to say anything about food?
Yeah, so I'm a very picky eater. So that was probably the biggest thing I was worried about on this trip, is not being able to find food. But I sure could manage, and I tried a lot of new places, which I was really excited about. My biggest thing that I was excited about food-wise was afternoon tea. I've been to afternoon tea in Chicago at the Drake Hotel. They do a holiday tea, and I go with my best friend Emma every year around Christmas. It's great. It's amazing. It prepped me for what this would kind of be like. But, you know, nothing beats the real thing, like real scones, and everything was just so full of flavor. And I pushed myself to try foods I wouldn't normally try, maybe some of the finger sandwiches I would have normally not eaten. I told myself, I'm here in London, I'm having tea for the first time, I might not ever get this again. So I really pushed myself to try new foods on this tour, which is not something I usually do. So I was very proud of myself that I took the opportunity where I could.
Very good. I think you're proud of yourself for good reason. That's great. I want to hear from the students about what your interactions were with just sort of regular British folks. I mean, people you would encounter, I mean, shopkeepers or just people on the street or people who came to the concerts. Do you have anything at least in kind of general to say about what British people were like and how they welcomed you? To what extent they welcomed you, or if you had any memorable encounters that you want to tell us about. We'll just let whoever wants to talk.
Yeah, I can start. So my boyfriend Chase is also in the choir. He has a family adjacent member, like a good family friend, who lives in Scotland. He lives in Glasgow. And so he was able to come to Edinburgh for our concert in Edinburgh. So it was super awesome to be able to meet like a real Scottish person who has lived in Scotland for
the majority of his life. He said he really enjoyed our concert. He had never been to a choir concert before, so it was his first time, and it was really cool to be able to hear from him about his experience watching a choir for the first time, let alone a choir all the way from the States. But in general, everybody there was very welcoming and friendly. I'm not sure if I expected them to not be friendly, but I was pleasantly surprised by the general good vibe that everybody had.
Fantastic. Anybody else have anything to add about that?
Yeah, I can say something. So the most interaction and conversation I had was right before, during rehearsals and rugby for the Evensong. And it was very interesting. I was sat next to this one girl who went to the school of rugby, and I was also sat next to Professor Tanner's wife, which was very intimidating because obviously she was they were both amazing singers, but they were just so welcoming and kind and, willing to share music and work things out with me. And if I was either confused about something, they were always so, so kind and so willing to share all the knowledge they had, which they had a lot of, and I had maybe not quite as much of, especially of what we were doing. And I just felt right at home there, which was great because it just meant that the music carried us all into one big great conversation, which was just really lovely.
Fantastic. That's what it's all about. Very good. Did anybody do any shopping and purchase anything that interesting and exciting that they want to tell us about?
I need to start by not speaking for myself, but speaking for a member of this ensemble, who is his name is Colin. He just graduated. He's a music and history major, and Colin's favorite day was the Roman baths at Bath. And Colin's a quiet guy generally. Colin, if you're listening, love you. Mm-hmm. Gonna miss you back there, man. But Colin he's very understated. But Colin got the best souvenir award because Colin purchased himself a full-on Roman war helmet while we were in Bath. And I just don't know if I've ever been happier for somebody to live their dream in a way that he did in that moment.
Wow.
So, well-deserved best souvenir trophy goes to Colin Egan. So.
Did that get on the plane with him? Or how did he get it home?
I believe his parents were there, so I think his parents were like, we'll take care of this one for us. So.
Very good. Anything else from anybody, any of the other students?
I don't think any of us can top that.
Fair enough. Well, let's talk then about the musical performances that were part of this tour. And that, of course, is front and center, the essential heart of why a trip like this happens in the first place. So let's have maybe each of you talk about a particular moment in the performances that was especially meaningful to you, either a place you performed that you especially loved, or it could be a piece on the program that you especially loved singing. Whatever anybody wants to share. Layla, go ahead.
So one moment that really, really stuck out to me was our last concert right before, during rehearsals in Edinburgh. It was so beautiful, and the ring in that space was just so long and warm and beautiful. The first note we let go and let it hold, I immediate chills. But there was a particular moment. Dr. Burke was kind of pulling people out to hear what we were singing and give some feedback. So I think her words were, let someone else say it so you understand that what I'm saying is true, which good strategy, eventually works. And I got pulled out during my favorite piece in the whole set, and also my favorite piece of all time. And I'm not just saying this to be kind. It's a piece that Dr. Burke wrote called, it's a setting of Set Me as a Seal. I love that piece so much. Everyone's heard me say it. You can ask anybody. I love that piece. And I got pulled out during this big climactic moment. And as I got pulled out, I was like, yeah. Because I knew it was going to sound amazing. And I, at the minute she cut it off and we just rang on this beautiful note, I was like, oh, I'm so excited I'm here right now. It just, everything, all the stress of getting there and rehearsals and blah, 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 all of it just kind of melted away. And it just kind of, it felt so right to be there in that exact moment, and made the entire tour, all the good things kind of summed up into one little second there.
beautifully said. And I know what you're talking about, that for as beautiful it is to be in the choir for an exquisite moment like that, there's something to be said for stepping away from the group and hearing the totality of it in a way that probably isn't quite possible when you are part of the choir making that moment. That's a beautiful story. Love that. Who else wants to go next?
I can go. So like we've talked about before, we had an evensong at the rugby school, which is a very different experience for all of us. I think for basically all of us, it would have been our first time performing in a sort of a ritualistic service like that. But as Dr. Berg briefly mentioned before, they had this beautiful organ in this church, and hearing this organ like ripping away for the introduction, and especially their exit piece that they did, it was just like spectacular. Hearing the organ in its entirety, our organ at the chapel at Carthage, it just like pales in comparison to the sound that this organ was producing. It was just amazing to hear an organ like that. And we also got to sing Herbert Howell's piece. And we don't have the space necessarily at Carthage to sing music that is like hooty, and I don't even really know the other descriptors of that sort of music, but it's like Dr. Burke has mentioned, it's for men and boys choirs. It definitely has a different sort of sound than what we normally achieve in Carthage Choir. So it was cool to be able to experience trying to produce a very different sound than what we are normally used to, and then having a space that allowed it to actually make sense that we were singing it. Like when we were rehearsing this piece, me and everybody else was thinking, man, this is real. We got to do a lot of work on this. But the second we stepped into the right space and we're with the rugby singers, we were like, oh, this makes sense. And it was amazing to be able to experience a piece that was written for a specific space and be able to do it in that specific space. So that was awesome. The evensong was amazing.
Mm. I'm sure that was thrilling. And as Dr. Burke said, this is the evensong that was the final evensong for your friend. Is that right? Yeah.
Yes, correct. Mm-hmm.
So extra special.
Yep, I mean, so we performed Ella mentioned Herbert Howells. He was 1892 to 1981 as when he lived, and he was famous for writing these settings of these pieces that are sung, you know, every day. That are texts from the Bible that are sung kind of in the evening night hours. And Howells wrote 19 different settings of these same two texts that are all for organ and choir, and each one of them was written for a specific building. And this particular one is his service for King's College, Cambridge, which if you've ever heard of, I know, Cambridge before, I mean, if you think about the idea of walking in and seeing something, the fan vaulting on the ceiling with stained glass, the organ, I mean, a space that is designed to take you out of yourself in that sort of sense of the word. And rugby, while it's not King's itself, it has, you know, you walk into that chapel and you're just, I mean, the ceiling, the elevation, the stonework, I mean, you're just, it removes you from whatever you were just doing and places you securely in that moment there. And actually there's a tenor solo that starts the second piece called the Nunc Dimittis, and the guy who sang that solo was the chorister at King's College, Cambridge. So just the immediacy of that connection was just really, really incredible. So.
I was blessed to sing those Howells pieces as an undergrad, and they're magnificent. And I envy all of you for having the experience of being able to sing them where you did. That's great. Ben Breitbach, what would be a musical highlight that you want to share with us?
So, okay, I'm going to sort of piggyback a little off what Layla said, because Set Me as a Seal is just amazing. Oh my gosh, I love that piece so much. And we actually sang that at rugby for Evensong, which I didn't know was going to happen until it actually happened. That was fantastic. But a piece for me that kind of stood out, To Build a Home, which was the piece that kind of, I believe Dr. Burke said, kind of the format for the entire set. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Berg, but this piece was normally done with an orchestra and maybe like a quartet or an octet. And so we were the first full mixed choir, I believe, to perform this and to for it to be performed outside of the United States, which is just, that's a really cool thing to be a part of. And we had, so Professor Hoagland did a solo for one of our performances, magnificent tenor, and then Jonathan Rasmussen, I don't know, I think so, he, another amazing tenor going into senior year in our choir, and he sang for the concert at Greyfriars Kirk, and it was just, I mean, they're both phenomenal singers, and to be able to do that piece in the way that we did, in the spaces that we did with the other students that we were able to sing it with, it was really cool. And again, that idea that it was the first time that had been done outside of the United States and with the full mixed choir was just such a cool thing to be a part
of.
Wow,
such an honor. That's great. Hayden, you're our grand finale. Do you have a musical highlight you would like to share with us?
Yeah, of course. I want to touch on the prayer that we do before the concerts, the Blessing of Aaron. It's a tradition that we do before every concert, an event, anything important that matters within the choir. And we did it before the concert in London, and we did it before the concert in Edinburgh. But not to bring the mood down, but my couple days in, my grandfather passed away on this tour. And to sing these concerts and to perform in these in the rugby evening song, and to do the Bob Chilcott workshop, it meant so much more to me. And to sing the prayers, I really wanted to give it my all. I wanted to do it for him. I wanted to showcase a big thing that Dr. Berg says to us is that this performance can mean something to someone. I mean, it had like someone can needs to hear this for them to have a better day or for them to have a smile or et cetera, et cetera. And I was doing that for our audiences because I was struggling during some of these performances because of my family passing. And I was using these performances to smile again and to have my joy again and to know that I'm creating something beautiful with my fellow friends and with my professor. And to give it to the audiences, that's what mattered to me. And I'm very happy that we were able to do that and that we were able to give someone something that they can enjoy.
Mm. Hayden, thank you for saying that, and thank you for saying it so beautifully. All five of you have been so eloquent in sharing about what I know was an absolutely amazing experience for all of you. Ella Bergfeld, Hayden Izumi, Ben Breitbach, Leila Nemri, and of course, on the podium, Dr. Maggie Berk, back from this spectacular trip to Great Britain. My thanks to all of you for taking time out of your busy schedules to share stories about this great trip, and best wishes with all of your future journeys. And thanks again for being part of the morning show today.
Thanks so much, Greg.
Yeah, thank you. This is awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tomorrow, of course, is the 4th of July, and the studios of WGTD will be closed for the holiday, so there will be no morning show broadcast. But if you turn to the morning show podcast, you can hear a really fun conversation recorded way back in 2003 with Ace Collins, the author of a book called Songs Sung Red, White, and Blue. It's a celebration of some of our most beloved patriotic songs. And in keeping with the holiday, Saturday's podcast will feature a conversation with Michael Waldman, responsible for a book called My Fellow Americans, celebrating some of the most important speeches delivered by U.S. presidents over the years. On Sunday, in a change of pace, a book about narcissism and the narcissists that live among us and how best to deal with them. To access the podcast version of The Morning Show, look for The Morning Show with Greg Berg. The podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts. On Monday, we'll be back in the studio with a conversation with Josh Silver, the author of a very important and informative book about redlining.
a practice, an unfortunate practice that has occurred all across the country that helped to keep many of our neighborhoods racially segregated. Josh Silver offers some thoughts on how this practice can be best combated. Our weather forecast calls for a sunny, hot, and rather humid day today as we head to a high of 89 degrees. Our overnight low under partly cloudy skies will be 68 degrees. Tomorrow, even warmer than today, mostly sunny skies and a high temperature of 93 degrees. Continued very similarly on Saturday, sunny with a high of 96 degrees. There is a chance of rain on Sunday. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha.